Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and the celebrating the new day and Baltimore baseball history around here. We'll be doing that all month long. It is March. It is a gambling problem, gambling month, awareness month to let everybody know what's going on. So I'm giving that a shout out at 1-800-GAMBLER. If you know someone who has a problem, this is a good time to be addressing that. Our friends at the Maryland Lottery are giving me these. For those who don't have that problem, I want to have a little bit of fun. 10 times the cash. We are going to be doing, and I'm wearing my Fadley shirt. We're going to be doing some Fadley's Fridays live. Hey, Nasty, when are you going back live on the radio? We're going to do some Fridays from 2 until 5. I had a good time doing a couple Super Bowl. I had a really good time sitting for 8 hours. My back hurt, and I couldn't pee when I wanted to, and the breaks were short. But I felt loved, so that was the important part. So I'm going to do live radio again from 2 until 5, beginning in baseball season on Fridays. Our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION, as well as Jiffy Lube MultiCare and Liberty Pure Solutions are going to be making that happen. This guy here was one of the original OGs. He was my original Oriole guy along with Tom Kapp and Hump and Howie Scher, who celebrated yet another birthday the other day, and the great Mark Messina, who he and I converged in the same room in Harrisburg for 2.5 hours and didn't know we were in the same room with another 250 people and didn't get to see each other. But Alan McCallum has been in my life so long that we were at the Jeffrey Mayer game together. Did you cover the Cal Ripken 21-31 game for us, or am I nuts in saying that?
We missed each other. We were talking at that point, and I went down a couple of weeks before, but not the actual day. That was the beginning.
So you, the beginning of our relationship really is when Cal Ripken was doing 21-30. What was that month that we got to know each other?
We're coming up on 30 years, old man.
Susan Monday, who was my 10th grade English teacher, and I found the A- she gave me on my catcher in the rye paper, which I'm still pissed about because they keep those things. So I've known Alan, most of my life, it feels like, since 1995, certainly before we had WNST, and we celebrated 25 years of WNST. Alan, there's a documentary coming out later on in the month about our history and 25 years of crazy doing this and, like, all the stuff that we're doing here. I don't ever really think, maybe since I did Free the Birds, it's been 18 years, that I thought I would welcome you onto a show where you and I, the beginning part of our discussion would be, there's going to be new owners, and what does that mean? Dude, the night it happened, I was going out to a yoga class. The Ravens had just lost. I had done a day and a half of civic angst and grieving and purple therapy, as we call it around here. And my first tip actually came from Mike Rosenfeld because he's a web guy. He saw it right away. Boom, boom, boom. Raskin had been telling me for months it was going on. I had some inside poker with people in December that said, the offer's there. Now, John's too hard-headed to take it. It's crazy that these people want to continue to fight the family. But I never thought I'd welcome you on and we would ever just – I just thought the old man's never going to die. It's kind of like I said, it was like Castro's Cuba. Like, it's that way. It's always been that way. It'll always be that way, even though that way is not the right way.
I'm not sure I ever thought I'd live to see it either. It's still sort of sinking in. I guess we have to wait for it to be ratified by the owners, but it seems unlikely they're going to hold this up any longer than they have to. I was with someone who is relatively new to Baltimore over the weekend, and he was asking me to quantify what the feelings of the public were about Peter Angelos and the Angelos family. And my exact words were, I can either try to do this, tell you this story in about 5 minutes, or I can give you the real story and we'll be here for 3 days.
Well, I released the Peter Principles for that purpose. And right. As you know, Tuesday of this week, and you were a part of this for many years of my life, my father's birthday is March 5th. And on March 5th, we celebrated my father's birthday and made people cry. And people would call in every year and talk about their fathers. It was all very raw to me back in the 90s when I lost my pop. And I began every year just to honor him, to remember him every year, to talk about this before the Ravens were in town. town. I mean, we're going back to when I knew you. The Ravens weren't in town when I met you, 95, right? So,
right.
I mean, literally, the Ravens were a glimmer. They were 10 weeks away from happening when you and I got to know each other in that summer. And you were working up at the Oregon Ridge, as I believe, doing concerts and probably getting mosquito bites, if I'm not mistaken. I would just say, like, this whole period of time, it's surreal to think anybody could have made it any worse. Like, just from a civic standpoint, like, just everything. They played a baseball game in the middle of a, you know, military endeavor in the city. Just, you know, they screwed up the celebration of the Super Bowl that was won by forcing the football team to go get their ass kicked in Denver. Like, it just, in addition to every, they didn't pay me money they owed me and then sent the bird to assault me. Like, I mean, you can't make this up. But I wrote the book thinking, all right, I want people to never forget, right? So I released that last month, and then I thought, my book on my father, as you knew me, as you met me in 1995, this would be an interesting – tell people how much I loved baseball when you met me.
Oh, I remember our first conversation being about – George Brett and Paul Splittorff, and just the impact and the old Orioles and the impact that they had on you. And you talked about wanting to do if whoever went down had to know baseball, had to love the Orioles, and because that's who you were and you wanted to convey that. And
it's the reason this whole thing's here.
Sure. And it said something to me about what you wanted to stand for on the, at that time on the radio, and what your brand needed to be. And I certainly felt like I was the right person for that job. And it's almost 30 years later. And I mean, there's never been a question about you loving baseball. Obviously you have a checkered
relationship with your family. I went to 30 ballparks in 30 days in 2015 that I love baseball so much. But I mean, a decade later, I don't want to say I was resigned to Cuba always being like the way Cuba is, or even at this point, can you imagine in our lifetime seeing Russia not be Russia, sure, or Putin not running Russia, or like literally bad stuff continuing on forever? And then, like, you work in the district, right? That where they used to have the Wizards, they'd be moving them as we're talking about franchises. But you know, you work in the district, the whole football vibe down there and what the former football team represented, or RFK Stadium, and what it became, and how awful everything about it, from nobody being there, toilets exploding, just all of it, and the awfulness of that human being and no one wanting to support him. And the fact that they have a new day, a new name, a new you know, like whatever. I don't know that deodorizes things or makes people just run back. I guess the bigger picture for me, and the thing I've been talking so much about, and I had Dave Shinen on earlier this week, and I'll be talking about it all month as I re-release this book on my father and why all this got built and why I love baseball and my last name being Aparicio. By the way, I got a great Aparicio, a Salada coin from 1963. So I've been collecting, I've been back on eBay. I got a Milk Duds box, Aparicio 71 with the Red Sox hat. So like, I want to love baseball again. I want it to come to me. I want to know how to get it on my phone. I want to watch games. I want to care. My wife loves baseball. Like, we're those people. I want to like feel it change in some way. And I don't mean like, and look, it's very obvious and it sounds self-serving, but if they let me back in, they're already better people. You know, like Cal Ripken's running, like I'm a real media member. Yeah. I'm not the Caucasian guy, you know, but like I own a radio station. I'm on the air every day. I shouldn't have to send you my clips, Chad Steele, to verify that like I'm not a blogger or a podcast or I have a following, or it's a joke. So the notion that I should get my media credential back will let me know that A, I'm invited. B, they don't mind questions being asked that should be asked, that need to be asked, that have to be asked, right? But I don't know when the public notices it. You know, I mean, so much is lost on me in the baseball side of, well, if they spend money, they're committed. No. Like, to me, so much of this, you spend $1.8 billion and you are billionaires. You're bringing Bloomberg in on this. tell me how you're going to transform the city. Not how you're just going to win games, because it's like, as I said, they won games last. They play. They charge. The hot dogs are going to be better. Fine. What's the big plan here? Because it can't just be winning. And the stadium's 30 years old. Now they have $500 million to put back into the stadium. Like, what's the plan? Because Fredo never had a plan, dude. You know.
Well, so you're talking about a couple things that converge, certainly, but some of them. Certainly the team and how the direction the team goes will be squarely under their control. The city, they can certainly impact and influence, but it's not entirely up to them. So the first thing I'll say is, I mean, you mentioned I work in the district. I've been in, while I will not tell you that I know David Rubenstein, I've been in the circles with him on occasion because of his commitment to the Kennedy Center for so long. What I know about him is that everything he does, or at least everything he did at the Kennedy Center, he did with commitment and passion. And those are, I can't imagine any two better things to come to a civic responsibility like the Baltimore Orioles with. Hey, if you're going to pay that much money for something, I would assume that you're going to want to do it right. Now you know as well as I do, the only way to be a good owner in sports is to hire good people, spend a lot of money, get the hell out of the way. They've already got good people. I mean, Mike Elias and his crew are the best management the Orioles have had, at least certainly in my adult lifetime. And I would be disappointed if that changed at any time.
We're talking about a first place team. And once we get done with all of this transition conversation, we're going to talk about them having seven outfielders. It might be a major league outfielder, right? Like literally they have a roster depth problem, maybe some pitching, but we'll talk about that. But like, they also have a lot of empty seats and a lot of empty souls and a lot of people like me that have been broken by them, you know, by what they've done to the community, what they did to the value of my home, what they did to the Ravens, what they've done to fan bases, what they've done to their own people, what they did to Kevin Brown last summer. My last movement was I got to drink from the other water fountain in Arlington. To go down there as a media member, and I got treated completely differently than anybody else. That's who those people were. So I literally, if there's a media credential with my name on it on opening day and I walk in there, I'll know something massive changed just because I'm there allowed to ask questions again and do my job that I've done since I was 15 years old. But like, I'm wondering when the fans feel it, see it, know it, maybe even the tenor of the broadcast change in some way, maybe I don't know, but it feels to me like massive change needs to be made here, much like on the Washington football side, much like in any place that's just bad. Like the Inner Harbor needs massive change. Things that are messed up, you need to acknowledge that it's messed up and fix it. And saying, well, we won 101 games, we're good. No, dude, the place is so far. They launched spring training, Allen, and the center field camera was shaking around all over the place. And I'm like, my God almighty, you've had a television network for 20 years and broadcasted spring training where the wind blows and you don't have a stable camera in the outfield. Like, this is what $220 million a year of the public teat bought a television network.
So there's a lot there. First, even when it goes through what they own 40% until Peter Angelos passes away, he's going to have the controlling interest, but there'll probably be some, it's not going to be 100% overnight. So that's the first thing. When you talk about the city, I mean, like I said, Harbor Place, downtown, those things are not exclusively under the purview of the Orioles. The city has a problem in the fact that downtown needs an overhaul. That is about the Orioles. It's about a lot of things. Metropolitan cities in America in general since the pandemic and the advent of a lot of technology have issues in terms of getting people back down into the cities, right? You're talking about the cost of parking. You're talking about the cost of going out in the world today. It's very different than it was just 5 years ago. So a lot of people are looking at money they spend at home on their television packages or what have you.
Well, you're in the entertainment business, dude. I went to CFG Bank Arena 2 weeks ago, $17.50 for a beer to see Fake Journey. Like, that's what it costs. When I go to Meriwether, it's what it costs. I mean, like, I hear that, but I'm also like, I feel that. And then I come home and I see it and I say, what did I get and what did I spend? Like, in any transaction, in any walk of life, what did I spend and what did I get? And how does it make me feel? Did it fill my belly? Did it, you know, did it make my muscles bigger? Did it make me feel like more a man or a better man or a, you know, charitable or, you know, whatever those emotions are for people? The Orioles need to, you know, it's Barry Manilow, bro. Up, down, trying to get that feeling again, you know?
Not to mention that a couple million people who used to work in the city and would, at the end of a day, say, I'll walk down to the Camden Yards. A lot of those people don't work in the city anymore.
Correct.
So it's a much larger trek and choice to go down at that point. There are a lot of obstacles. Now, the new leadership of the Orioles can contribute to the solution to those things. I don't know if they can solve them all by themselves. We're at a transition point in our history as a society about how we look at cities, how we interact with them, and how city-based teams like the Baltimore Orioles are, how they're going to entice people back downtown. That is about partnerships with local businesses around. That is about making the cost of parking palatable for people. They need to figure out how to incentivize people to come back down for the games to say, hey, it's worth it to me to do this. Because it's something I love and it's something I can do with my family. I can feel safe when I'm going down there, which is a huge part of this. And ultimately, as you said, what is it worth to me to make that outing a part of my night, part of my life? What, for the average family, five times during the summer, 10 times during the summer. And then you get the diehard baseball fans who I assume are going to show up anyway. You're talking about the difference between the casual fans and the people that want to figure out time to bring their families down, particularly in April and May and September, when school is part of the equation and rush hour is going to be busier getting into the city. I mean, it's certainly not, the Orioles certainly have to be part of the solution in solving that, but they can't do it by themselves. It really does have to be a civic partnership between the leadership in Baltimore, the businesses in Baltimore, the parking garages in Baltimore, and the new leadership for the Baltimore Orioles.
Alan McCallum has been my friend for 30 years and covering baseball for us last century, as we like to say here, and his day job at the Kennedy Center at Strathmore and other places and managing facilities and being a part of really a leadership group and commuting down into the district the last couple of years and the plague. You mentioned David Rubenstein. Is it Rubenstein or Rubenstein, or do you not know? Because I hear everybody mashing it up. It's kind of like John Feinstein. People mash up his name like they mash up my name.
I have never heard anyone that knows it, that knows him, call him anything but Rubenstein.
Rubenstein. Thank you. Good.
Initials and such as well, but David.
I want to get it right. And you know, in the case of all of this, and this is bigger picture. We'll talk about the roster and we'll talk about Elias and all that. We've been waiting all these years. And incidentally, the first thing that hit me the second day, and this is a real, not tribute to the Angelos family, but whatever it is, they get what they deserve. The first thing I thought of, Alan, I can't remember in really most of my relationship with you going down there. I don't remember ever being treated well. You know what I mean? Like, I can't remember one time where I ever went down there from the time Peter bought the team. And I'm talking early Joe Foss and through Davey Johnson and just all that. Ray Miller treated me well. Johnny Oates didn't treat me well. And then apologized for it and then treated me very well once he understood me a little bit. I was treated well by Kevin Malone, who's a man of God, who I don't think could treat anyone any other way.
Sure.
But I was mistreated by lots of people, not Alan Mills, not there were players, obviously, relationships we have with players. Later, guys like Brady Anderson would go on to mistreat me later on behalf of Peter, because that was part of the jam, part of the jam. It's that way with Bisciotti now. I mean, there are people that took – everybody had to take Chad Steele's side to keep their job, right? Even though they all know he's wrong. They all – there's no way Baker Koppelman doesn't know he's wrong, and Roy Summerhoff, and Eric DaCosta's written me and told me he's wrong. John Harbaugh. So, like, I get all that. But the baseball side of this and me going down there, I was told to be mistreated by everyone, including Buck Showalter's wife wrote about it last year, having it writing on the internet, that they told her I was a bad guy to stay away from me. So I literally don't remember any part of this where I went down there other than an occasional nice human like Fred Manfred being nice to me, or Dave Johnson maybe seeing me and being nice to me. I haven't had a press pass in 18 years for a minute. I haven't been anywhere near. Every time they put the cameras in, I'm like, oh, that wall used to be green. When did they paint that wall? How did they get the birds on the wall? I know all the spaces. I know all the alcoves, but I haven't been there in 18 years. 18 years. So I literally don't remember the last time I walked in there and felt like that's my team. They're happy to see me. Greg Bader has always stunk eye me from the time he was a ball runner, whatever he was, base runners with the bird and like all that stuff with when they wore the jerseys in the 90s and were eating food up. And I'm talking 30 years ago, man. Like, so my first thought to my wife is like, I might go down there and somebody might be nice to me. Like that would just be unlike any experience that I've had in this century, for sure, 24 years, for sure. And I thought, man, won't that be nice? You know, like, I mean, that's just me out loud. Like, won't that be nice if that happens? But I also think that there's the bigger picture of what are they going to do to fix it for everybody, and what's the big idea? What do you do with $500 million that's not the baseball game? The Ravens have made their statement, right? They're going to build gold-plated bathrooms, and they're going to have concerts. Sure, they will. And everybody will come. Sure, they will. And they're going to have comedy acts. Sure, they will. And they'll be able to charge a premium to premiums behind the hot dogs and the beer. I mean, they had a press conference, Alan, and that I was banned from, that my Caucasian employee could attend if he wished to, but he has no interest in asking, you know, people in suits about the beer prices. They said, well, we all know that the beer is always a little colder inside the perimeter, and the hot dogs always taste a little better when you get them inside. And I'm thinking to myself, the public just gave you $600 million, and that's what you got from me. Okay. I mean, that's all they have to give, right? When they don't even have people like me there to even a PSL owner for 25 years, poor sucker's license, guy on the radio who helped them sell three sections of PSL. Like, it's mind-numbing to me at 55, but there's also this point. Chad Steele might be here forever. They all have jobs for life in Owings Mills, in the same way that when you were Greg Bader, or name any of the names of the Oriole people that hung around, Stockstill, hung around forever with jobs, Masson, all of it, nothing ever changed, because there was a fealty to it that I'm interested to see how David Rubenstein and Cal Ripken and whoever is in charge. I don't know that Cal's really going to be in charge. I have no feeling that Cal's going to go to work every day and be a 60-hour a day guy the
it
way
seems unlikely.
Yeah, it feels like he's like going to be a figurehead, like, and they need a grown-up there to run the franchise, to be a face for every business that's been shined by this family. I have my own personal story. I'm an Aparicio. I mean, my whole life and livelihood was put to this, but so many of the people just left. People just moved their business. They said, we're not going to have our business associated to this. We're going to buy the football team. We're going to put our sponsorship money, whatever they're going to do. They need to have that back, because if they're going to have Rutschman and Gunnerhead, I hear that we're going to invest all this money. Great. You can't do that when 18,000 people are showing up at the ballpark and they all want in for $5. And all of them are like me that don't want to spend $18 on a beer. No matter what, I'm just not going to do that. It sickens me to think about spending $20 on a beer.
Well, so you know as well as I do that when there's turnover at the top in corporations, institutions, what have you, it's hard to change everybody overnight. That seems unlikely. So you're going to have a lot of the same people in place, just with a new marching orders for a significant amount of time, and whatever prejudices and sort of modus operandi that was in place previously. No,
they were petty people, man. Let's be honest, right? Like, I mean, that was part of the DNA of the whole thing. Was right. I would see Greg Bader at the front door, and he'd look at me like, I've been emboldened to mistreat you. I've been sent to mistreat you, and I shall, and nothing will be done about it, no matter what. So, like, you know, no, you're not going to be allowed to do your job. He told me to buy a ticket. I said, I bought a lot of tickets around here. You know, like that, I bought a lot of tickets around here. So I'd like to think that it will smell better instantly in some way that needs to be felt. That's all, just felt, and more than just a press conference, that somehow, some way, they're in front of this and someone's out in front of this. I always use David Modell as an example, and you know why I use him as an example? Because everywhere I went around town, I ran into him. He was actually like out doing stuff. He actually thought it was important.
Look, Ness, you know as well as I do, I mean, if they are smart people, and all the indications are that they are, they know the reputation that the Angelos have sort of built for themselves in all the circles they're going to be walking into. So I would like to believe, as smart people, they will prioritize changing that air about them. Again, probably what doesn't happen overnight, because the Angelos have owned the Orioles for a long time, and they have left a significant footprint in a lot of places. But it's going to take some time. But if they're smart people, I and knowing what they're walking into, I would like to believe that they have a plan and will prioritize that. But as is the case with all these situations, the only thing you can say is, we'll see and we'll be watching.
Well, right. I mean, that's where I am, is like, nobody's more open-hearted about any of this than me. Nobody ever wanted to be mistreated, not paid, thrown out, lied to, forced to lie on their behalf. Like, I just gave that to you in a sentence. That's pretty good. I mean, like, literally, that's literally the order. And then watching everyone else get mistreated and being told, no, that's a bad guy. That's a bad guy. That's who they were. You know, very reminiscent of a guy running for president here this year, who should be in prison or under a prison. Alan McCallum is here. He should be knighted for his great work with rock and roll and his band and his great work here at WNST over years of covering baseball. Let's get onto the field, man. I mean, because it is, I think there's nothing more important than who owns the team, and there can be no change more important than that. But also, that it has to happen fast, because the team's here and you're going to get an opportunity to get people back at $12 tickets, no fees, special 29th of February, we're selling tickets. But the things that have happened right away that lead me to believe that this sale could happen soon, Corbin Burnes, right? Like there's real movement here that over the next 6 or 8 months, they can win the city in a way and the team on the field. And it's an embarrassment of riches. I mean, as I sit here with Luke every day, we talk about Kowser, we talk about Kerstedt, we talk about Stowers, we talk about, well, Santander and Mullins and Hayes, and what's going to happen, and Holiday, are they going to start the clock, 91 at-bats at AAA? Like, I can give you all of this, but I know they're going to be a pretty good baseball team this year. And I don't think there's any way they're going to screw that up and not be in the pennant race or a significant part of the pennant race. And all you have to just put on Major League Baseball Network, and they talk a lot about the Orioles, man. The Orioles are something everybody wants to talk about. And once you deodorize this and get John Angelos out of here and all the nonsense that's been going on, this thing could really turn around and be awesome, you know, really awesome.
So we just got finished talking about how long we've known each other, just shy of 30 years. And in that time, I think about year after year after year, either in the winter or in spring training or right at the start of the season, where we talked about what the Orioles were, what they can be. And there have certainly been years where, you know, you're pulling your hair. I'm pulling my hair out to say something positive about the team, or, or years where you looked at it in the Showalter years and he says, hey, they have a chance to be good. They have a chance to do something. But I know there has never been a moment when I believed, looked at you and said, all indications show that this team should be the class of the American League. Maybe not the best team in baseball. The Braves look like that on paper anyway. The Dodgers are certainly set up to be a powerhouse for a long time. But this Baltimore Orioles team should be the class in the American League. And the Corbin Burnes trade sort of cemented that. Now, the Bradish injury sort of puts a little note on that. And I mean, it's hard to expect John Means to be healthy because that's as good as he is. That's just sort of been part of the story of his time here. But
you're done counting on him. You're done with that.
I wouldn't go as far as say I don't expect he's not going to pitch this year, but to expect that you're going to get 30 starts out of him with 18 or 19 of them quality, we'll have to see. But when Means is healthy, he's certainly a quality pitcher, certainly a guy that can win some games for the Baltimore Orioles. We'll see what he's able to do.
Well, the Bradish thing was certainly less than, you know, it puts a little crinkle in the whole thing. And to think that he's going to be normal is, you know, I know there are other cases. Luke brings them up, you know, Tanaka being other guys that have had this problem, Nola, but.
You know, last year when Batista went down, I saw a lot on the internet, a lot of people saying, oh, maybe he'll rest for a couple weeks and he'll be back. And I was like, you won't see him until 25. If they're smart, you won't see him until 25 and he'll get the surgery. I know nothing about Bradish's medicals or what his condition is, but anytime you hear those words, the first thing you should be thinking about, certainly as the individual and certainly as the team that holds his services for years to come, what do we need to do to get long-term quality out of his career? And my first thought is always, if someone's telling you you should have surgery, you should have it. Because if you try to rehab it and it falls apart, you've probably hurt yourself even more, and you've set yourself back another 2-3 months where you could have just gone ahead and had the surgery. Now, I don't know that anyone has said surgery to Kyle Bradish yet. I don't know that. But I just know that the majority of these situations, that's usually the way they go. So we'll see. I would much rather have Kyle Bradish ready for the bulk of 25 and 26 and 27 than to see him risk going out and not being ready. And then we won't see him until 26. He's got tremendous talent. And he's a tremendous talent on a tremendous team. But the Orioles can win this year without Kyle Bradish. And if the doctors are telling him that he should sit it out, then they should probably go that way. We'll see. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I mean, are you of the mind frame that they're going to make deals for pitchers? Because I am, and I'm convinced that two or three of the pile divers that they'll have around here in September or October aren't guys we've even heard of, and they're pitching for the Rockies or the Mariners right now, or they're about to get cut, or even where Cano was last year, which was in no man's land, or even Batista a couple years ago, or even Lopez before that. Like, any of these guys, they've – if you're in the bullpen, you're damaged by your own admission, unless you're Greg Olson and were sent there to be that guy 30 years ago. But like, there is a point in all of this where your best relief pitchers are guys like, you know, Coulomb that you didn't even see coming.
So there are a couple things. First, you know, there are one or two guys in their system. Cade Povich is a name that comes up all the time that are probably a talent that can help them. Does that mean one of them's ready to step in and win 15 games and throw 180 innings? I don't know the answer to that question, but they have some talent. That's the first thing. The second thing is that you've already identified it. They have a glutton problem with too much talent that they need to figure out how to make the roster in either this year or coming up. Now I know they're looking at Santander and Mullins and Hayes and probably saying, hey, these guys are going to be free agents soon. They're going to cost a lot. Are they worth it to us? And that's a question for the new ownership we just got finished talking about. I don't know how they're going to approach that. But there's another thing, and it seemed clear. Mike Elias likes his guys. We've sort of seen that. And he doesn't like to give up on his guys, but he's got too many. So you got to do something with it. And we've talked about it a lot, how in the previous regime, it was, oh, we're going to grow the arms and buy the bats. And that always felt backwards to me. I think this is exactly where you want to be as a franchise, particularly one that has a limit on what they can spend. You want to have a ton of bats, and you want to match up with the Florida Marlins or the Seattle Mariners or the Tampa Bay Rays, teams that seem to be able to find pitching or develop pitching but that need offense, and make deals with them. But you have to be willing up to give. You have to be willing to give something up in the process to get that. And
well, you said the word develop. That's something that never happened for years and years and years around here. And, you know, I saw that Athletic story last week about how coaching's changed. And you know, I remember going out to dinner with Don Wakamatsu a couple of years ago, who was friends with Jack Del Rio, who had been a manager in the big leagues and a longtime coach. And he just explained to me how much different the analytics and the Billy Ball has changed the game. Moneyball, Billy Beanball, I should say Moneyball, changed the game in regard to what you need to do and in regard to spin rate for pitchers. I mean, when I hear the players talk about it, it's nerded out to the point where they are taught the science, learn the science, and learn what they're good at and what they're not good at, and to try to take what they're good at and make it special. Yeah, and like literally, this group has been really good at taking project guys, O'Hearn. I mean, just to go through the names of people that they're like, he's got a hitch in this, we can fix that. He's got a arm angle in that, we can fix that. And no offense, but for years here, if you could talk about it all you want if you're Sid Thrift, but there was no science, but it looks a little like he's dropping his shoulder out there. Now, you know, I talked to Luke about this last week. I mean, because it's been 18 years since I've had a press credential, right? But I used to sit in Tony Gwynn's locker in San Diego, and Tony had a closet. And it was literally a closet that he had tapes and video. That was science then, you know, and that's how George Brett hit 390. It's how Cal Ripken went to the Hall of Fame. Is, you know, he could see the game a little bit better. Now they all see the game, not as good as Cal Ripken, better than Cal Ripken, better than anybody's ever seen it, because they have data, science, angles, cameras to measure all of it and say, we can fix that. Well, and, and they're good at it.
The glorious thing about the technology is that, yes, they're saying, we know how to optimize what you do. And if you throw five pitches, but only three of them are effective, let's do that. But the other part of it is that has made – like, oh, well, you're only going to face the lineup twice. You're only going to throw five or six innings. I mean, it changes the game to the –
it's a game of specialty.
Yeah. So, Jack, you know, the fact that Jack Morin, his ERA went up because he threw an extra 100 innings every year doesn't matter as much anymore. So, yeah, they have the ability to do that. They can find that kind of talent. But the Orioles have everything they need to go out and get more pitching, whether that be money, whether that be the talent to trade for them. They can set themselves up for a very long time, the next 6 or 7 years to be very good, very special.
Dude, I love you. I miss you. We got to go to a ball game. I bought a bottle of nice expensive wine, a nice $50 bottle of The Prisoner. I got this over at Drug City. Most expensive bottle of wine I've bought. I bought it. I've kept it. I look at it every night. It sits right next to where I eat with like arm's distance. When this thing becomes official, we're going to release The Prisoner. And some people celebrate with champagne. You know, I'm curio. I'm cannabis sponsored. Celebrate however you need to celebrate. I'm going to have a really good red blend in a special goblet. And I'm going to celebrate I'm going to do it online. Like the minute it happens, because I've waited my whole life for this change. And, you know, I do hope they let me in. I hope they're nice to me. I hope they're competent. I hope they're good people. I hope that for the next 20 years, I get all the feelings back that I've always wanted to have about baseball that were, you know, defecated out of me by who these people were and how indefensible and indiscriminate their awfulness could be.
There's a very good chance that we're entering a really beautiful renaissance for the Baltimore Orioles.
And that would mean a beautiful renaissance for the city. It really would. Because if 3 million people start coming back downtown and feel good about it, good things will happen.
Agreed.
Yeah. Alan, appreciate you. Alan McCallum, our longtime baseball insider. Find him playing music, thinking about music at the Orioles game. Find him at the Kennedy Center. And, at some point we'll get together and we'll do something fun together. I swear. We used to be friends, Alan.
When you pop the when you pour the wine, call me on Zoom. We'll do it. We'll do something.
Pour the wine.
We'll do it together.
All right, first place, baby. Alan McCallum. I'm Nestor. We're Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.